So I spoke about the idea that each of us has an inner philosopher inside of us, this, the voice which asks these questions. I'm, of course, a philosopher, but I haven't always been a philosopher. When I was a young teenager, I didn't have no particular interest in philosophy beyond anybody else's interest in things. I was interested in many other subjects. In fact, in my autobiography, The Making of a Philosopher, I describe how my main interests as a teenager were in sports and music. I didn't have any great interest in academic study at all. But when I reached a certain age, about 18, I suppose it must have been, I had a teacher who taught me divinity at school, and he awakened my interest in these kinds of questions, particularly through considering the existence of God and the status of religion, a topic I'm going to talk about in the very final lecture. And that made me interested in these more abstract questions about the nature of the universe and why we're here and the nature of the human being and the nature of the self. All these questions arose, and so my inner philosopher, which had been latent or dormant all those years and not particularly active, was awakened during those years when I was a late teenager. And I think that experience must apply to many people. I mean, most people are not, when they're young, already thinking about philosophy when they're in their early teens. But probably almost everybody, when they reach a certain age, is at least capable of taking an interest in these questions, so long as the questions are presented to them in a way which is engaging and clear and relevant to them. They can then say, yes, I am interested in that question. Now, I wish when I was a teenager I would have encountered somebody who would have just put to me in a nice clear form what all the problems are, what's been said, and that would have stimulated me and awakened my interest, and then later on in life I would have pursued it, read more, I would have had a solid foundation. As it is, I learned philosophy in a very haphazard way, going from one subject to the next. But in the course of these lectures, my aim is to put across all the basics of philosophy so that anybody who has an interest awakened in the subject can find their interest satisfied by just listening to these lectures and reading the notes, the readings that go along with them. The way I've constructed this course is not historically. I haven't constructed the course by saying what were the first things that were said and what was said by later philosophers. So I mentioned names of philosophers in passing, but the course is structured according to problems, theories and topics. So in each lecture I'll take some big problem, some big topic, the self or free will or the mind-body problem, whatever it may be, and I'll discuss that problem within each lecture, hoping each lecture will be relatively self-contained, so that by listening to a single lecture, you'll get a good sense of what's been said about that problem and what the various positions have been. I won't always attempt to resolve problems. I'll often leave problems open at the end, questions open at the end of each lecture. But the idea is to give you a series of distinct topics, though connected topics, and give you the various points of view that have been had toward those topics. Perhaps I should emphasise here that the kinds of questions I'll be discussing are age-old problems. They were problems raised 2,500 years ago by Plato and Aristotle, and they've been the staple of philosophy for the entire period in which it's been around. It's not that we've got new problems now which have come up 10 years ago and we're working on solving them. We're dealing with age-old, very deep, very intractable problems that have been around for a very long time. Things have been said, and clarifications have been made, new theories have been developed, but I wouldn't say that any of these problems have been definitively resolved in the way a scientist may, say, resolve the question of what the structure of the genes was when Watson and Crick discovered the DNA and the double helix. It's nothing like that. What philosophy will do is to go towards a clarification of issues and a furthering of ideas, but it doesn't involve taking questions, resolving them, moving on to the next question. The questions I'm considering here are the age-old questions of philosophy, which should have been around as long as human beings have been able to think about philosophy. Now, to begin with, it's important to get clear about certain fundamental concepts, and I'll start off the lectures by discussing some of these concepts, starting with the most basic. Here you might feel, I hope not, but you might, that it's a little bit dry, it's a little bit removed from what you want to discuss. You want to get onto the big issues of free will and the self. That's understandable, but first it's best if you have got some good grasp of the basic concepts that we'll be dealing with. So I'm going to start off with those, and the first four lectures will be about such concepts as knowledge, truth, evidence, and logical reasoning. And after that we can start talking about ethics, the self, free will, and God. So, the thing we need to start with, really, is the nature of knowledge. After all, philosophy is the pursuit of knowledge, among other subjects also the pursuit of knowledge. But there's the question, what is knowledge and how much do we really know? And that's, I think, where we'll start. Most introductions to philosophy do start with the question of what we know, and I will make no exception to that rule.